All right, let me come here finally to the invitation, and I have read this book. You received an invitation to supper, I believe, in Allendale, South Carolina.
I had gone to Scotland to speak. They were at an old castle in Scotland, and they were comparing my works with that of Robert Burns, which I thought nobody would believe that, but they were. That's where I was. I just returned from Scotland and was invited to speak at a conference in Philadelphia at the turn of the century. At the end of my speech there, there were several white ladies running the halls to catch me. They said, "Mr. Talbert, will you come to South Carolina and speak for us?" It was in that speech that time, met a lady by the name of Camille Nairn, who worked for the Department of Education for South Carolina. She invited me to speak, and at the second speaking, I met her mother, but I didn't know it was her mother at the time. I just simply met a very classy, older white lady who looked as if she was the epitome of the Old South, but very gracious, very nice. And I remember getting a letter from her, a handwritten letter, saying how much she enjoyed my speech. That was the end of it. So I got invited back there. And because her daughter worked in education and she was at an educational conference, I just assumed her to have been a retired school teacher, as most of the people there were retired or working in the field of education, higher education and secondary. I worked with a team of consultants from Boston University. So we were all meeting at the airport there in Columbia. Once we got in the car, the plan was we always go out to have dinner together to talk about what we had to do the next day. I said, "Where are we going to dinner?" They said, "Well, we've been invited out to Miss Camille's house." I said, "Oh, that's the lady that I met, the older lady that I met when I was at Sacklahatchee." "Yeah." I said, "Oh, she's a retired school teacher, right?" They said, "No. Do you know who she is?" I said, "Not really. That's Camille's mother. That's all I know." They said, "Clifton. She's the owner of Roselawn Plantation from the 1700s. She's growing thousands of acres of cotton, and her house is on the historical register. She is the epitome of the antebellum South." So that's where we were invited to supper. And for whatever reason, I'm not quite sure why, the drive there and finding out who she was. You got off the four-lane highway, you got on a two-lane highway, you got off that highway, you got on a two-lane blacktop road, and eventually you get off the blacktop road and you're on a dirt road that has ruts from wagons in it. You go through this long lane of oak trees that are dressed in Spanish moss on either side. And when you get to the end of this lane, there's this low country mansion, seemed like growing out of the ground, surrounded by cotton. And all of a sudden, my world just sort of collapsed in front of me. The tie, the suit, the briefcase. I was back in Glen Allen, Mississippi. The world that I had left behind. And I couldn't tell the people who were with me. I think it would have been embarrassing to me. I knew I didn't want to go in, and I was dealing with all of this in my head. So finally I had no other choice but to get out of the car, and we went through the back. Our steps were so tall, I said it was like walking up the Mayan ruins. You finally get to the back veranda, and I'm upset with myself because the memories of being at the governor's mansion at the state of Mississippi, my home state, was just flooding me. And I remember the butler who opened the door there, and I didn't even know his name, don't know his name today, never shook his hand. He was just like an animated human being, and I just fell in line with the animation. And I promised myself this would never happen to me again. So I was prepared to meet the butler, to shake his hand, introduce myself, ask his name. And when the door finally opened after knocking on the door, you could hear all the laughter inside and everything going on. There was no butler at the door. It was the 5'4" lady, Miss Camille Cunningham Sharp, the matriarch of Roselawn Plantation. And our paths would cross for 5 years. The year she died, which would have been 2007, the winter of 2007, I got a call from her daughter, said, "Clifton, Mama has passed away, and we wanted you to know that." Because in those 5 years, our lives had crossed. And I told my wife that day, I said, "Barbara, I have to write this story because no one could believe what happened. And what happened could not have been orchestrated or arranged. Our paths were meant to cross for a purpose and a reason." And it took me 7 years to write that one book.
After her death.
After her death.
Somebody came along with you when you went into that plantation house.
Right.
And who was that?
Mike and Kathy Padgett. Dr. Kathy Padgett was the evaluator for the University of South Carolina. When a program is done by another university, you have another outside evaluator to make sure everything is going according to the contracts. And she was the outside evaluator.
All right. But there was someone else.
Oh, yeah. You did read the book, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
When I was in that car driving down that dirt road, all of a sudden, the car became crowded. There was no longer three people in the car. There was four. Little Cliff from Glen Allen, Mississippi, as real as day. I felt as if he was sitting beside me, holding conversations all along the way.
And you were talking to Little Cliff.
I was talking back. We weren't arguing, but just talking. It was as if he was looking out for me and telling me what to be aware of and what to be conscious of.
As I recall in the book, there was a particular picture you saw in the hallway, I believe.
Yeah.
And that was a riveting experience for
Very
you.
Much so.
Tell us about that.
This is probably around the third year of my paths crossing with that of Miss Camille. Most of us stayed at bed and breakfasts. Everyone that favored bed and breakfast, they would put us up in. But that third year, she said, I want Clifton to stay here at the mansion, which was very difficult for me. I didn't want to do it. 1955 came alive. I had not thought about Emmett Till ever, I guess. I'm out in the woods, surrounded by cotton in this low country mansion. Miss Camille is an older lady, closer to 90, but she's white. The teachers who are staying there are all white. She had a dog named Summer, which was female and white. There was no way I wanted to stay there, so I tried to get out of it. Because there were a couple of guys there from Assumption College. They loved the Old South. I said, why don't you guys stay? They couldn't stay. Her daughter said, no, mother has decided that you will stay here. But that's how I was feeling about it. And when everyone left, I felt alone. But Miss Camille was very gracious. We had eaten tons of food. And in the South, they think that food can cure anything. So late at night, Mr. Talbot, would you like some more food? No, I was just at odds, apprehensive. We were walking. She said, well, let me take you to your quarters. That's what she called where I was staying. Because the other two teachers who were there had already gone to their rooms. She walked me through the house. It was a slow walk that probably took 20 years in my mind to walk through that house. And we got to she called it the galley, and that beautiful furniture there. I said, everything that was not burned during Sherman's March was at that house. Hmm. And that was a picture. And I can't intelligently explain this because it was a small picture, and all the other pictures were big, ornately framed pictures that she had shown me of her relatives and things like that, and named everybody, gave me a story behind everybody. This small picture was right over a small desk, and there was a glowing yellow light over it. I felt drawn to the pictures, the best way I can say it. I went and looked at it, and nothing extraordinary. There was a white couple of ladies and a guy in a wagon in a cotton field. That's all I saw. But the picture had a force with it. Something was going on inside my head. And I couldn't leave the picture. I stayed there and looked at it again. Same thing. That's all I saw. And finally, I got down on my knees and literally peered into the picture as deeply as I could because I couldn't leave that one picture. And at the back of the picture, the fields, what I had assumed early on to have been trees struck by lightning that had burned or whatever. When I got on my knees and looked into the picture, I saw that they were black people that were in a position of picking cotton but caught by the camera so that it was like odd shapes because they were moving down to get cotton out of the bowl. They were not known to even been in. I don't think anybody thought anything about it. And as I looked at the picture, I began to cry because I thought of The Invisible Man, the book by the Oklahoman, Ralph Ellison, very well known for having written The Invisible Man. And I said to myself, I've missed these people. They were here all the time, and I didn't see them. I said, they were overlooked. They were there all the time and totally overlooked. And I felt so badly and was asking myself the question, who had overlooked these people? How had they been overlooked? And how had I made that mistake of doing likewise?
At first, you didn't see it.
Yeah, I stood there. You don't know how long I stood there looking at that picture.
Until finally you looked.
Until finally when I got down on my knees and looked, I saw them.
Yeah.
They were there. But the picture was not about them. The picture was about life in the South and about the people who were up front, not about the people who were at the back.
Yeah. Well, we could go on, and rather than do that, we'll tell people to read the book, The Invitation. And you do write one chapter, chapter 9, Invisible People.
Right.
And that's what you're talking about,
what
you just talked about now.